and now find that, as a people, we have become anxious, broke, and overweight. This leads us to ask, what can we eat to help us find the happiness we seek?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 753rd edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Montevideo who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metroforum.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with our own Miss Idaho, Nikki James, at the controls.
Good morning,
Nikki. Folks, this from the Declaration of Independence. You remember that document, right? And I quote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." We all know about having the right to life, and how we must fight occasionally to keep our liberty. But what we seem to be a bit confused about is this whole business of the pursuit of happiness. For many, if not most of us, pursuing happiness means shopping for creature comforts, the apogee of which is the Black Friday sale, in which we camp out on a cold sidewalk in order to be the first in line for a Made in China. All of that Made in China, however, is not bringing us the happiness we seek. On the contrary, we now find ourselves, as a people at any rate, anxious, bankrupt, and overweight. Or did we take the wrong turn on the road to the good life? Franck Mattei, in his book A Real Life, points to our obsession with pursuing money. And I quote, "So we all chased wealth, while we largely neglected or considered as secondary the health of our ideals, the nourishment of our children's minds and bodies, the honesty and integrity of our institutions of government and religion, the safety of our infrastructures, hospitals and schools, the strength of our social fabric, of our neighborhoods and family, and that much maligned stepchild whose air, water, and soil are the essence of all life, our environment. In facing the holiday season with this profusion of on sale buy now, we pause to ask, can food help us find the happiness we seek?" And who better to ask than the author of Real Life, Franck Mattei, who is the author of Real Life and who has not made the connection yet. Franck is in the Tuscany. And we did have a preliminary call from him this morning, so we expect him to be tuning in any moment now from way up there in this beautiful vineyard he has in the Tuscany, Montalcino, Tuscany, at the Mattei Vineyard. Franck was an advertising executive working in New York City in the high-voltage, high-stress environment of advertising, and decided to cash it in, and he moved to Tuscany and built a vineyard and settled down into a life of raising grapes and writing books. And when we last checked in with him, which was 185 weeks ago, on the previous edition of the Food Chain, we talked about his move from the big city to the country as chronicled in that book. And it was such a wonderful story, and so much I think about it often. So I thought when that book came back across my desk for his new book, A Real Life, I got to thinking about where we have come as people in search of our happiness and in search of the real good life and what that means to all of us. And Franck's new book, A Real Life, Restoring What Matters, Family, Good Friends, and a True Community. And it seems like we've headed in the other direction and are missing out on that. And so we'll hopefully be able to pick up on Franck today and tune in with him from Montalcino Italy and talk about what a real life is. But until then, it's just you and I reckon. And we can do this because we know how. And so the phone numbers today are 831-479-1080, 831-479-1080. Pick up your phone and join us and talk about how we can use food to get back on the road to the real good life. Not the good life of made in China, where we find ourselves fighting over who can buy it the quickest at the least cost, but the real good life, of family, of friends, and real community, and how we get back to the pursuit of that real good life rather than the pursuit of all of that stuff that really just makes us anxious and broke and overweight. So that's the subject today, folks. Franck Maté found his real good life by cashing in the high voltage life of an advertising executive and moving to the Tuscany region of Italy and starting a vineyard, or actually resuscitating a vineyard that had been there for many, many years, since the Roman time, actually, and making that vineyard productive and an object of much desire, and people actually buy his wine, and they think well of his wine, and he lives in a small community, and he has a family, and all of those things become central, and the world outside of that becomes secondary. And so that's kind of where we're going today. What is a real life, and how do we get to it? I think of when Franck's book, A Real Life, came by my desk, I got to thinking of a meal I shared in Tuscany with family and friends, and how we were out there in the countryside, and this meal went on and on and on for what seemed like hours. And in the course of our enjoying the food and the wines and the companionship and the discussion, the outside world kind of melted away in the pressures of what exists out there in the world, kind of melted away into insignificance. And what became really important was each other and the food and the companionship in that conversation. And so when we think about a real life, I think a lot about that meal out there in the Tuscany. And I wonder if there is a way that we can bring food, use food, to bring that back. And as we cruise into the holiday season this year, and we're frantic to get in on the best deals at the Black Friday sales, and we camp out on the cold sidewalks waiting to get the made in China, are we not heading in the wrong direction there? And should we not be focused more on coming together and in families and friends and communities and realizing what's really important? And I truly believe that food can be used for that pursuit. And that's where we want to go today with you. If you pick up your phone and join us, we'd love to hear from you. And maybe we'll even hear from Franck Maté, who's tuning in from the Tuscany to talk about what a real life is to him. And so that dinner that I had in the Tuscany, I remember well because it was a big table. It was a big group of people. The wines were simple yet elegant. The foods were local and simple. And that really made the meal, and it really made for a wonderful coming together in a way that our pursuit of goods does not. You know, when we fight over the made in China in the Black Friday sales, it's not going to bring us together. So let's talk in ways about how we can use food to build our sense of family and our sense of friends and our sense of real community today. And I'd like to hear about your dinners and how you use food to bring your families together, to bring your friends together, and how we can use food to build a community, a real community. What kind of food is that going to be? Is that going to be genetically engineered soybeans that have been manufactured and processed into some kind of fancy cakes that's packaged in colorful plastic and sitting on the shelves of a grocery store? I don't think so. I think it's going to be real food grown by real people that we know and that we can look into their eyes and know where our food's coming from and know how precious it's going to be to our meal and to our coming together. Well, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson today. It's you and I, and maybe Franck Mattei from the Tuscany in Italy. Do stay tuned. Ooh, that is Franck. He is just tuning in. So hang in there. We will be right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, welcome back to The Food Chain. Franck Mattei, author of Real Life. Franck, welcome back.
Oh, thank you. Nothing more relaxing than spending 20 minutes dialing on a phone that doesn't ring.
But we got you through. Thank you very much.
I just picked myself a drink. I'm fine.
Okay, good.
Hi, Michael.
So, you're in Montalcino?
Montalcino, in Tuscany, yeah.
Say it again. Montalcino. Montalcino,
yeah.
Tuscany.
The best wines in the world, so they say.
Uh-huh. But you weren't always a winemaker. You were once an advertising person, if I recall.
No, I was in publishing. I actually wrote books since I was about 27 and lived in New York for a while. And then one day just sort of woke up and thought, this doesn't seem quite human. So we're on a holiday and found this beautiful area of Tuscany, the southern part, with rolling hills and vineyards and olive groves and all the long views and great food.
Long views and great food. You know, that's interesting. I was looking at a picture of the Mattei vineyards in Montalcino, Italy, in Tuscany, and what I recognized, what I really tuned in on, was the long views. And I once did a radio show from Monticello, Thomas Jefferson's place,
right,
in Virginia. And I always wondered about why anybody would have a farm on top of a hill when you have to haul all the heavy stuff up to the top of the
hill.
That's
the key. They want the view, right?
Well, yeah, and I thought about, because the rest of Virginia is covered in trees. And Monticello is on, the first ridge. So you can have a view. You can see. And if you're a visionary, that's an important thing to have. You have to be able to see.
Or if you're lazy and like to sit around and have a nice view, like Chinese watercolors, with layers of hills out to the sea.
Yes, exactly. And that's where you're at, right?
Yeah, and mostly, and strange enough, it's because of the food culture. The Etruscans settled here 3,000 years ago, and they had this tradition, very, very fertile land, easy to work, good climate. They had this tradition of two big meals a day, of food that they grew. And the Tuscans still do it. The world here stops at 12:30 or 1 o'clock, and everyone sits down to, a 3 or 4 course meal. And it's a tradition that just obviously getting eroded now somewhat. Mm-hmm. But it's still almost, you can die of any kind of problems in Tuscany between 12:30 and 2 in the afternoon, because nobody's going to help you.
Nobody's going to come to you. We're going to have our dinner, and we're going to relax, and we're going to be part of
dinner. Dinner, you sort of do the same thing, you know. And, mm-hmm. and the irony was that it's a very arid place. Hence, water was short supply, so what they drank was wine. So food and wine are, you know, the sacred items here. And people are still very much growing their own food. Even people who live in towns have little plots outside of towns, you know, little that are dense with vegetables and fruit and olive groves and of course, grapes.
Well, but yet that's what most people have done throughout history. And so we've kind of changed that. And you open your book, A Real Life, with a quote from the Declaration of Independence, talking about how we are endowed with certain unalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, we all know about the right to life, and we all know that every once in a while we have to fight for our liberty. But this whole business about the pursuit of happiness is seemed to be something that we don't quite yet have figured out, because it seems like we have elected to pursue our happiness by chasing things that don't quite bring us the happiness that we seek, right?
Well, it seems that I've talked to a few people, pharmacists especially, and they said the most sold drug in almost all the world are tranquilizers and at the same time antidepressants. So I mean, we're totally stressed and we're totally depressed.
Yeah, okay.
And I don't think we have really made any headway. I think we sort of lost the sense of happiness, because it used to be so simple. I mean, basically you had two things that drove your life. One was food, the growing of it, the preparation of it, the eating of it among friends and family and neighbors. And then you have the social aspect. We thrived on each other. We used to get together and get to eat, to play cards, to walk in the town square. We get together in little shops and chatted and gossiped and told really bad jokes and really big lies. We fed on each other's company, and we fed on really, really good food. We've lost both of that. We are almost, I have know very few people, at least in North America or urban settings in Europe, who actually even touch any kind of real food. It's mostly prepared or boxed or semi-prepared. So the joy of food, of looking after yourself by growing your own stuff, is gone. We don't seem to share food anymore. The social aspect is gone. And we have substituted encounters, like I just described, with gadgets. You know, we're online, we're
made in China,
tracking, we're texting and sexting, and we actually think it's sort of communicating, and it isn't. There's absolutely no comparison with a tiny smile that's face to face, or a little joke, or a little nudge, or something that's really human, you know. And I think we're getting worse and worse. Obviously, getting worse and worse.
Well. And if you stand on a hill, like one is prone to do in your neck of the woods, and take a long view of we the people, you know, as a people. I mean, individually, we're all doing fine, right? We're all svelte, and we're strong, and we're lithe, and we're wealthy. But yeah, when you look at us as a people, we are anxious. We are bankrupt beyond belief. And we're overweight.
So, you
know, where did we take the wrong turn in turning away from the things that really matter, which you say, of course, are family and friends and community, and food, which, well, I think the food is what brings us together. It's what makes all of that work. But where did we turn away from our food?
You know, I think as soon as we have gone to the city, as soon as things became secondary, okay, we used to be primary people. We used to grow our own food. We used to build our own house, fix our own cars. We actually did things with our own minds and our own hands for ourselves, okay? At one point, and not very recently, I mean, even in the 50s, I remember when I was a kid, or in the 60s, people had gardens. People built their own fences, fixed their own roofs and changed their own roofs and took the carburetor off their car. And did that kind of thing that was A, creative, you have to use your mind, B, it made you very proud that you actually did something, you know, you did something.
I did this.
That is And here it is. It was broken before. Now it's fixed. Or, you know, it was a bare piece of land. And now it's growing something. What do we do now? You know, nothing. Absolutely. There's almost nothing that, that we produce that we can look at with any kind of pride or sense of creativity or sense of, you know, no, you can't show your kid, hey, look what I did for you today. You know, what did you do? You clicked 4,000 buttons? I mean, good God. And I think that this is where the problem begins. If when we started losing this this self-reliance, the sense of looking after ourselves, I think we become obviously become anxious. You know, look at the courses that, like what's it called, Outward Bound. What do? They put you out in the woods, and you have to sort of survive. And this is for kids who are troubled or right. who are, have emotional problems or criminal problems, terrible backgrounds. They learn self-reliance and hence self-esteem. I mean, how many people do you know that have that now today? Seriously.
And, and they have classes in it, or they say they teach it, but I don't understand how they can teach that.
Look, you know how you teach it, Michael? Next door, our neighbors next door, you know, down about a quarter mile down the road here in our next neighbors, have a little girl who's 4 years old. She's completely up to date on internet and all that stuff and makeup, etc. But when you're down at their place for dinner, she rushes back and forth in the kitchen. She sets the tables. She'll make sure everybody has the food. She is the hostess. Okay, she is just as much a member of the family, contributing as anybody else. When they're out in the vegetable garden, she's out there hoeing and picking and seeding and getting a sense that she's an integral part of the family and a creative part of the family. Now that's where you learn the stuff. Not from a book or not from video or by yodeling. I mean, you actually have to be in a society and in a family and a neighborhood that reinforces that kind of activity. That does result in
having that cut our children off from those responsibilities.
Well, the irony. Oh my God, I just was asked to do.
Hold the story. We have to take a quick break.
Okay.
Folks, this is the Food Chain. Dorn, we're having fun with Farouk Mate, author of A Real Life and You. Do stay tuned because we're going to talk about how we can use food to get back on the road to the real good life. Do stay tuned. Well, where did we go wrong on the road to the real good life? Somehow we lost track of what really makes us happy, that our families, our friends, our community, and we turned away. Look for other things. Black Friday sale, made in China, and it doesn't make us happy at all. And
the next gadget.
Yeah, and gadgets. And in, like Farouk Mate says in A Real Life, we gave up being primary people. I really like that notion, wherein we used to take pride in taking care of ourselves. And we've kind of become secondary people, where we rely on others to take care of us. And that makes us anxious to be reliant on others. And one of the most frightening places we see this is in cutting children off from their families and sending them away for their self-esteem classes to someplace else.
It's true, isn't it? And the whole irony is that I was talking, one criminologist telling me about how urban centers would be much better, much safer if children were kept busy. I mean, what a crazy idea. Children shouldn't be kept busy. They should be given an opportunity to join in with the family, with the neighborhood, in a creative sense. They shouldn't be given little tasks and hobbies to sort of keep them quiet and occupied. You know, that isn't the answer. The answer is to make them full and wholesome and creative and productive and social. Good God, there's an interesting, scary study by the University of Michigan. They followed 14,000 college kids for 30 years, between 79 and 2009. And Michael, they found a 50% decrease in empathy and a 35% decrease in perspective taking. Now that's, you know, looking at a problem or a situation from someone else's point of view. I mean, we are becoming, and what, if we don't have empathy, and if we don't have, we can't understand somebody else's point of view, how are we human? You know, no wonder we have Congress that is absolutely clawing at each other, the countries that are malfunctioning everywhere. We just have lost the sense of society, and that's because we're not practicing it. You know, there's no mystery. You know, just there isn't enough personal contact.
Well, and it would seem like all of our technology is driving us. As you were talking, I've got to thinking, do you think that this is all deliberate, the steering us away from the things?
It seems like, you know, I don't believe in conspiracy, but it sure is working perfectly, isn't it?
Well, if it isn't a conspiracy, it is working perfectly.
If you grow your own food, if you spend your time, your joy comes from chatting with the neighbor, bullshitting down in a park, or running into somebody in the street and gossiping for an hour, who is making money? Who's making a profit? No one, okay? Except you are being happy, okay? The world as we know it, which is this myth that, you know, that give us riches and we'll be happy. Bullshit. Obviously we're getting richer and richer. Well, not anymore, but we were until a certain point, and we're starting getting more and happier. You know, I mean, look at a simple thing. How to recover it? Look at food. It can give you four things that are absolutely mandatory. First of all, it gives you economic freedom. Okay, it is said that you, for your investment in growing your own food, you get 25-1 return. Okay, so if you spend $100, you will get $2,500 of food in exchange. Economically, it makes complete sense, okay? Eating well, Michael, nothing tastes as good as something you grow yourself, okay? We have garlic that I grow here, and it's the most proud achievement of my life. I mean, I write books, and I make wine, and do all sorts of stuff, but the proudest thing is my garlic patch, you know? But the food that comes when it's completely ripe, you can watch it ripen. You don't use fertilizers and growth things, and you don't overwater this, so it's really concentrated flavor. You eat only fresh stuff, when it's most mature. It's free of any kind of treatments and preservatives and fertilizers and herbicides and pesticides. Environmentally, obviously, the same thing. There's no poisons, there's no pollution through packaging or transport. People are, you know, shipping an average bite of food 1,000 miles. I mean, it's unbearable. But the most important thing is the social aspect, okay? I think that grow your own food. As I said, the little girl next door, our son has always been completely involved with mom and dad and hoeing the garden from the age of four and in participating in every part of the growing process. Then cooking, then it becomes a joy. There's a certain pride of taking your own stuff that you grew and you put it together. Even if you can't grow your own stuff, buy some real primary things for your food and put a meal together. You don't need things that are half prepared. You don't even need recipes. Just think, you know, how certain taste and put the flavors together. But then you share a meal. You know, that's the biggest thing. You share the thing that you've grown and you've prepared together. It's such a, you have something to talk about. You know, you can talk about the bloody worms or the rodents or the deer that came and ate your food. Something to share. Okay, that's a huge thing. And in preservation of food and giving, I mean, it becomes a social thing. Things mature, obviously, instantly here in seasons. So what you do is you have a whole bunch of stuff, you can take it to your neighbor. Then he has too much of something, he brings it to you. It's a social bond. It's like a perfect bond for society. If we just get back to this kind of basic notion of making food vital as a social and a survival aspect, economically, as I said, makes great sense. I think... the whole thing, the rest of society will take care of itself, you know?
Well, and that's exactly, takes me back to my question. If food can be made, will make us primary people, why are we being steered into this pursuit of stuff that makes us secondary people? Or we're totally reliant?
Yes, because what do we do, Mike? We are absolute victims of advertising. All we do is we are bombarded. I mean, there's a section in the book that describes how many millions of messages we receive by the time we're 20 years old. And all of them are, or 99% of them, about how we are sort of inefficient or incomplete at the moment. But if we buy something, whatever is selling at the moment, then we'll be fulfilled, we'll be happy, we'll be sought after, we'll be beautiful, we'll be, I don't know, everything that you can imagine, it'll give us.
And it never works, does it? I mean, it never works. It makes you feel good for a moment, and then we're bankrupt.
And then the next message comes, and oh my God, maybe that wasn't good enough. Yeah, and then not only that, you're absolutely right. Then we get farther into debt, so we get even more anxious. So it's like a horrible, vicious circle. And I'm telling you, the only thing it really is, turn off the television and just live your own life. To live, you know, do primary things, chop wood. Yesterday I hauled firewood to the house, and it's about a quarter mile return trip from where the wood is stored up in this lot in a wheelbarrow, back and forth, about 20 trips, so it's about a cart and a half load. Michael, it took 3 hours. I felt so bloody happy during and after, you know. I thought, my God, I'm ready for winter, you know. I don't give
a damn.
You know
what? I was selling Christmas trees for the Lions Club yesterday, and I was hauling these huge trees all day, and at the end of the day, I felt just like you did after hauling the firewood. I felt wonderful.
You feel alive. You know, you actually feel, hey, my body was made for this. This is great.
Got
great
red blood and coursing through your veins, and you're hungry,
exactly.
and you're full of energy, and life is
good.
You
know, with some sweaty gym and jump around in some machine, which is ridiculous. Pay for it. I mean, can you imagine we pay to be allowed to physically work? I mean, we're living in an asylum, Michael. I don't know who's looking after it. I guess nobody, but we're... Don't get me started on this subject.
we're on this topic. And then we're going to have to take a quick break. I want to ask about what happened to us when we turned away from being primary people. What happened to our family? What happened to our friends? What happened to our community? Right back with Franck Maté, author of A Real Life. Well, folks, what happened when we turned away from being primary people, people who could take care of themselves and took pride in taking care of themselves, to becoming secondary people, people who rely on others to take care of them? What happened to our family? What happened to our friends? What happened to our communities? Well, let's ask Franck Maté, author of A Real Life. Franck, what happened to us?
Well, you know, Michael, I was just thinking while the commercial break was on. Okay, three examples of how we've lost happiness, self-confidence, and sort of, what is it called? I guess sort of a mental security that I can handle everything by myself. First, me. When I was 18, I had no money to go to live somewhere while I went to university. I couldn't pay the rent because I didn't have a job to do that. So what I did is I bought this old raft and I built a little houseboat on it. It was basically a shoebox, about 24 feet by 15 feet, and used old materials to build it, used castaway stuff to build fireplaces used old people's castaway stoves and things to actually furnish it. Michael, I did it for $800. That was not a great achievement. It looked like a shoebox, as I said. It wasn't gorgeous or...
But it was yours, and it was your home.
But it wasn't that. I actually built with my own hands and a saw and a hammer something where I could live, okay? And even though it was a piece of devastated crap visually, it gave me confidence for the rest of my life, okay? I thought, whatever happened, give me a hammer and a saw, and I can look after myself, you know? Our son, who was always in the garden, as I said before, and from a young age, and always helped mom cooking, and always helped mom preserving stuff, he was never terribly mechanical, okay? But now we have a winery, and he runs the winery, and there's some very complicated machinery in there, like bottling machines that push the bottles along and build a bottle, put the cork in and the labels, all this stuff. Humongously complicated. He had absolutely no qualms, Michael, that he's 24 now, of going in there with a screwdriver and a wrench and taking it to pieces and putting it back together. And it just came. Nobody taught him to be confident. You know, we didn't give him confidence lessons or give him confidence books, nothing like that. He just happened to grow his own food at one point in his life or help do it. And his confidence just sort of carried over with that.
And you get that by doing things.
Yeah, because he knew that he actually looked after himself by growing his own food, you know, and or helped to grow his own food and cook his own meals and preserve his own food, that kind of stuff. For happiness, Candace runs the winery now. She just got 95 points from Wine Spectator for her Brunello, which makes it one of the world's best wines. And she does all the marketing and takes care of all the clients who come in. She's sort of stressed during the day. Michael, she's happiest when she goes out and hoes in her vegetable garden, and she's She's 60 years old, and she looks stunningly beautiful. She youthens about 20 years every hour that she holds out there. And she beams. She loves doing. She loves working with the soil. She loves thinking while she's working the soil. I mean, the rewards that are out there from the simple list of activity are so many, and I cannot believe that we've completely lost that, you know, and it's so easy to regain.
But what happens to us when we lose that? What happens to
us? Well, I think we become anxious. I think we become
bankrupt and
insecure,
overweight,
and bankrupt.
And there we are. And if you look at the state of Western civilization, that's pretty much where we're at. We're pretty much anxious. We're very bankrupt, bankrupt beyond belief, and we're overweight as a people, as a civilization.
Well, it's an interesting concept. You know, we all talk about people are overweight, and the biggest cause, of course, is emotional anxiety or some kind of emotional pressure that causes to overeat and become obese. And so physical obesity is a huge thing that we try to concentrate on try and overcome. But what about financial obesity? Why do we have this obsession with gathering more and more money, more and more stuff? I mean, if you had a dog that went around the neighborhood and stole and took and gathered up everybody.
Well, it sounds like we had a boing. That would be Farouk Matei calling in from the Tuscany, just when things were getting interesting. But hopefully he'll call back and we can finish this up. But what about you? What do you think happens when we spend all of our time gathering money so we can buy more gadgets? And we can never have enough gadgets, of course. So what do? We borrow money to get more gadgets. And we always end up being bankrupt and overweight and totally anxious. Well, while we're waiting for Farouk to come back, let's go to this line here. Hello. Welcome to the food chain. You there? Maybe not.
Michael.
Yes.
It's Ferenc. I'm back again.
Oh, yay.
I was saying, we also have financial obesity. If you had your dog, went around the neighborhood, pilfered everybody's doggy bone and everybody's doggy biscuit and piled mile high, you know, a pile of dog food that you'd never eat if you lived to be 2,000 years old, wouldn't we sort of consider taking him to the vet and say, what's wrong with this dog? But, you know, if people do it and people hoard the stuff, think, hey, wow, this guy's great, man. He's a millionaire. He's a trillionaire. He must be really cool. He must know something. The guy's sick, man. He should be out hoeing.
working in the soil. And because we're like that, because we keep chasing these things, we find ourselves in this incredible fix, not only financially. If you look at the world's bank accounts, you see how broke we really are, and how anxious we are, and how physically and emotionally overweight we've become. You just got to think, what can we do to get back on the road to the real good life?
I think one of the big losses, and I think this whole situation has come about, this financial breakdown, I think half the world has become a confidence game. You know, it's become confidence.
Oh, really?
No, but where does it come from? In the old days, you'd have a little bank in your town, and you would know the banker, and he would know you. And a guy who sold you real estate would know you. Now you borrow money from who knows where. It's a fund that's divided into 18 million pieces in Hong Kong or wherever it is. There is no personal contact. There's no morality. I mean, if the banker is your friend, he's highly unlikely to cheat you. You know, he's highly unlikely to rob you. But if he doesn't know you, if
it's easy to steal from you.
Well, we don't even exist as people. I don't think it's all just numbers. You know, and your only aim is to increase the numbers. Okay, there are no people involved really. There's no face behind the victims. Okay,
we just hold that thought. We're gonna come right back. But when we do, I want to ask you what we can do to use food to get back on the road to the real good life. Right back with Farouk Matei. You stay tuned. Welcome back. Michael Olson here with Ferenc Matei, author of A Real Life. But I know the title of your next book, Ferenc, it's going to be Primary People. So when you write it, let me know, and we'll talk about that again. Let's go quickly to the phones and pick up Dennis. Dennis, welcome to... Oh, my goodness, I lost for real.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I got to turn off my radio. I'm sorry.
Oh, you got to turn off your radio. That's all right.
Okay. Michael, great program. I'd like to hear more of this. You're only an hour today, right?
Yeah, I'm only an hour.
Well, you started out. The problem is we've been sold a bill of goods. If we get this, we're going to be better. You touched on it a lot. But the value of community, I'll be real brief. I lived across the street from you on November 17th, 1989.
Right.
Earthquake.
Uh-huh. Remember the earthquake?
I don't know if you remember me, but our kids were young.
And, yes, I remember you.
The things like that bond us together. And we just went through this windstorm up here in Felton, and we moved into a new place on Wednesday, and we're thrown right into a tremendous challenge. And the little community, we immediately bonded together because we had to.
Mm-hmm.
That
nobody there to take care of you, right?
And us take care of them. My wife is sitting listening now. She put on a pot of beans and went out and shared them with the neighbors. We didn't have any power for 3 days. So that's the way food brings us together, like what your guest said about, sharing your food with others. And it's kind of a communion, you know.
Well, it is more than just food, isn't it, friends?
Well, I think it's... The connections to the food are so many, you know, that as I say, it is a huge social connector, and it's such an easy thing to have, and especially maybe this is the biggest gift we've had given to us, this economic crisis. Maybe this is our opportunity again to become real communities and real families that actually do meaningful things together, meaningful not sense of watching some, you know, some goggling or some television program, but actually preparing something, creating something. I mean, I have never found a bigger bond. I have a friend who edits my books with me, and we used to spend a lot of time working at the apartment on manuscripts, and we would cook and we'd prepare food, and somehow that would relax you into such a friendly closeness that you become infinitely more creative, infinitely more productive. I think if we just start with simple stuff, even if you can't grow your own food, get your family together and cook it. You know, cook some meaningful meal. Get primary products, like vegetables and meats and fish and poultry, not something half done or boxed, and prepare it. And just see the pride that even the smallest child will get from chopping or grinding or mixing or just preparing stuff and presenting it in a wonderful fashion that you enjoy together. I think it's such a fundamental thing. And, you know, as you said, Michael, in the beginning, it worked for millennia. I mean, and here it still does in Tuscany. It does with us. I mean,
we just ran out of time. But, Doris, thank you for joining us. Folks, this has been The Food Chain. Ran out of time. Dennis, thank you. Thank you, JT. Sorry we ran out of time, but we will be back next week. Thank you all so much.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.